sorry. So we're in the middle of Halacha Dalet of Parakei of Hilchot Deot, right? Halacha 4. And we said that even though within a marriage, relations are always allowed, assuming you're not in Nida, that there's a way to do it. So the Rambam continues along this line. And what we're in here is the range of what's called Kadeshet Atzmecha B'Mutalach. Okay, the Gemara says that a person can sanctify himself, can achieve levels of kedusha, dafka in the things that are within the range of the permissible. Okay? In other words, true levels of kedusha are not achieved because a person doesn't go up on the roof here and urinate. True levels of kedusha are achieved when even in the most mundane things, the way a person carries himself in the bathroom, in the bedroom, in the boardroom, right? In the flow of life. And so the Rambam picks those areas that are sort of easiest to fall with, and the goal, like kedusha, is where you develop a heightened sensitivity. Okay? So, let me give you an example. Okay? Well, you know what? The Rambam will give us an example. Ukeshehu misaper imah, lo yisaper betchilat alayla kshu saveh uvitno malay, velo vesof alayla kshu raev, ela beemtza alayla kshu itakel amazon shebimeav. You know, there's a certain level of intimacy that comes in a healthy relationship that's beyond the physical. And it's most easily recognizable in dialogue, right? It's like if you're going out with a girl, and you know, you're at the age already, certainly halachically you're at the age that you could get married, and whether you're sort of there yet mentally or not, like post-high school is when people at least start to think in that zone. You start to imagine, you know, what type of person you could end up with, and it begins to sort of fuel, you know, the types of relationships you have. And lots of people who go to public school in their 9th and 10th grade, and they'll date some non-Jewish girl, and they don't think about it, because they don't imagine you could ever marry a girl who's 9th or 10th grade, and since that's where they think the point is, and whether or not I agree with them is irrelevant for the moment. But people already in college, they actually think differently, because they imagine that you go out with a girl in college, you could end up, this could be the one, you don't know. So you start to think along that zone, right? So one of the ways that you can measure a healthy relationship, right, is that stage of the relationship that goes beyond the physical, right? Like when you're in dialogue, you know, when you, you know, I remember we had this discussion around about the time that Gil Mandelson came here to speak to you guys, and we were talking about, you know, the fact that the physical aspect of the relationship has its benefits, but it also has its risks, because it essentially it distracts you, it causes you to lose focus from the essence of the relationship, which is how you build a spiritual relationship, right? Like if a relationship becomes that physical, so you're not really communicating. And one of the ways you can measure that is if you allow a relationship to be non-physical and you see. You know, sometimes you have people who get into a physical relationship and then they realize there's an issue and they decide to stop it and the relationship dies because they never learned how to talk. They never learned how to communicate. They never learned how to partner, right? So that's an essential piece of a relationship. What's interesting is that the Rambam says, when is the ideal time to carry on that dialogue? You know, like you're married, you have a family. So the Rambam says, dafka in the middle of the night, not at the beginning of the night when you're digesting your dinner. Now tell me why. That's ridiculous. What's the difference? And there are two sides to this. One is spiritual, one is practical.
Practically, we're just very susceptible to our immediate wants and needs.
What, so you can't have a good discussion over dinner? Right after dinner?
We're not talking about discussions.
No, we are. Here we're talking about discussions. Because Shehu Misaperima is that intimate dialogue. We're not talking about relations. Relations is also here. We just talked about relations.
But here the dialogue is the euphemism for the relations.
Nope, it's not the euphemism for the relationship. It's actually talking about the dialogue here.
I don't know about that.
Okay. You can look up enough Rambam and you'll see that that's true.
If he's supposed to be, you know, giving completely of himself at this moment. So if there's anything else on his mind, he's not really giving himself completely. So he should do it at a time where there won't be anything else on his mind. He's done all his business, after he's eaten.
Okay, so not so much anything else on his mind, but
to focus on this act.
There's an underlying theme that when you're involved in the physical, it definitely takes away from your ability to focus on the spiritual. That's one of the reasons, by the way, that on Shabbat, there's a certain limit to the physical nature of our activity, which frees you up. Frees up your energy, it frees your focus, frees your state of mind to focus on the spiritual. To some degree, that's what you guys are trying to do this year. You're taking yourself to some degree, at least, out of the more intense physical world, right? You're not working. You're not, you know, sort of going to a job every day. You're not, you know, in sports camp. And you're putting yourself into a more spiritual environment because it allows you to focus, right? Much more on the spiritual endeavors that you're trying to do. So on a less noticeable and yet calculable way, the Rambam is saying that when you're, you know, sort of still digesting the physical, it's absolutely going to affect your ability to engage in the spiritual, right? To grow. That's one. There's also, by the way, a practical side to this, which is that on a practical level, you know, there's a certain tzniut, a certain modesty that has to happen in terms of how one relates to one's spouse in a healthy relationship. And I'm not talking about the purely physical, you know, that Movo was just referring to. And the middle of the night, that's the time when the kids are asleep and it's quiet, right? Also, one of the interesting challenges you have in developing dialogue is, can you create a space that's focused? Can you create an uninterrupted space? Right? If you think about it, that's what tefillah is. Like, what are you trying to do in tefillah? What is meditation? So most people think that meditation is to release yourself from your thoughts, right? You know, you're just trying to get all your thoughts out of your head. That's not what meditation is. Meditation is where you attempt to focus your thoughts on one thing. You can't not think, but you can channel the thought process to something specific, right? So it's the same, you know, when you're having, I don't know, I think it's a really important thing when you talk to people. Like, I don't know if you notice this, but, you know, sometimes you succeed and sometimes you don't. But, you know, sometimes somebody here will be having a discussion with me and I'll be able to, you know, not have the phone, sitting in the basement, you know, you're focused on learning. You're not worried about the phone or the meeting or someone comes. And sometimes we're having a discussion and the phone is on the desk and the BlackBerry's on the desk and the laptop and Shlomo meets next door or whatever. And these interruptions are always around the corner. There's a different energy, right? Like, we're going to go on a teal. We'll be down in the Negev. You'll see, you're down in the Negev, just a different energy. You're away from the interruptions of the world. And it's healthy to be away from the interruptions of the world, right? Like, I don't go on a Negev teal, you know, sort of get off the bus and go hiking in the desert with my BlackBerry. I just, it's an opportunity to let go of all that stuff. So the same is true. If you want to build a healthy relationship, you have to find that space in time that's totally focused on building the relationship. Most people don't do that. Most people go through so much time where they're so busy with so many different things, they're never really focused on any one thing. You know, the Gemara says, tafasta maruba lo tafasta. Right? It's like you're walking down the beach and some golden treasures, you know, sort of washed ashore, and there's pearls and diamonds and emeralds, and you're so excited. And so you're trying to pick up more and more and more, but you can't hold it all. So you end up with everything falling out of your hands. Right? So you have to take the amount that you can handle and just focus on what it is that you can handle, and you walk away with something. Right? That may be what the Rambam is saying here. Right? V'lo yakel rosho biyoter. Now this is interesting. Because even in the most permitted environment, like the Gemara says, you know, ishtoke gufo. Like, a healthy relationship gets to the point where you're as close to being one as you can be. Like, your spouse becomes an extension of yourself. You know, it's like, for example, in Hilchos Lashon Hara, there are things that you're allowed to say to your spouse that you're not allowed to repeat to anyone. Right? You're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara to anyone else. But in certain circumstances, you're allowed to speak Lashon Hara to your wife, because when you talk to your wife, it's almost like you're talking to yourself, and there's an assumption that that stays between the two of you. Right? So it's the same thing, right? How do you conduct that dialogue? Most people don't think about this. Like, you know, you wouldn't stand up on a podium in front of, you know, the rabbinical conference and start cursing. But if you're sitting just the two of you and there's no one around, right? So what's the difference if you utter a little, you know, blasphemy, right? If you curse a little or fool around or tell a dirty joke, after all, right? You're in a relationship where everything is allowed. It's not true. Because the way you conduct yourself in that relationship impacts the relationship. And therefore he says, Lo yakel rosho biyoter. You shouldn't be too lightheaded. You shouldn't be too fooling around. Shouldn't have gutter talk. Lo yinabel et piv bedivrei havai. Like, don't make that time that you have in those relationships to be wasteful. Like, the opportunity to have an hour with someone special to build a relationship is such a window of opportunity. You want to waste it on shtuyot, on zevel, you know? Like, meaningful relationships that you have. Like, I don't ever remember, I mean, you know, maybe marriage isn't a good example because you guys aren't in marriage, but, you know, even when you build work relationships, right? You know, like, Scott and I are close. I'm certainly very close with the Rayaron. I don't ever remember having a discussion with either of them that's just wasteful trash talk. I just can't imagine doing that, right? And I can talk to them about pretty much anything. We're that close. But there's a gravity to a conversation. There's a weight to it, right? V'afilu beino leveina. He says, even when you're in an intimate moment with your wife, don't allow the conversation to lower the relationship. Allow the conversation or fuel the conversation to raise. And by the way, if you're in a relationship and you constantly have to be thinking about this, and it stilts the relationship, it stunts the relationship, you feel like you can't be comfortable with the person because you're so busy trying to make sure you're talking about the right things, then you're not in a healthy relationship. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the fact that it becomes so part of your nature to have healthy discussions when you conduct your conversations that you couldn't imagine having an unhealthy conversation. Harehu omer b'kabbalah, so the pasuk in Amos says, "Umagid l'adam masecha." This is such an appropriate thing today. You know, what this basically means is that at the end of the day, what you say, it surfaces. Who you are, what you are, how you talk, you know, even in the most private circumstances, it comes out. You find out the truth about a person. A terrible story that broke about a Rav, I hope Bezrat Hashem it's not true, but it's not even relevant whether it's true. A significant Rav in the Jewish community in Israel who's now being accused of child molestation or some such whatever. And it just reminds you, like, you can't hide these things. Like, if that's who you are, if that's the stuff that you do, it comes out. You get to know a person. So the best way to make sure that what comes out and who you are is to be what you want to be out there, right? And when you conduct yourself in the way that you want to be viewed in your private moments, then that's how you end up being in your public moments. Even the simplest, most mundane conversations, you're going to be responsible for them. You're accountable for them. They affect you, right? This is an unbelievable set of halachos. Okay? That 1,000 years ago, Jewish halacha was telling us how or what the responsibilities of a husband are to his wife. And how you're allowed to have relationships and how you're not allowed to have relationships. Right? Like, you know, in certain circles in the Arab world, there's nothing wrong with a husband raping his wife. Like, she's responsible to give him, you know, whatever she's supposed to give him. And if he doesn't feel he's getting it, he can take it. And the idea of a woman charging the husband in a court, in a sharia, is just unheard of. In Judaism, that's a very, very serious. It's one of the 10 prohibited forms of relationships between Rabbanan in the Gemara and Nedarim. Right? Not allowed to do that. Not allowed to demand it. Not allowed to coerce a partner into having relationships, because it's supposed to be a vehicle and a vehicle for Kedusha that allows you to build something bigger than that. So the Rambam talks about this. And if you think about it, it's amazing that you're seeing a system of halacha that actually governs even the most private of circumstances, because even the most private of circumstances, right, what do you have very often in an Aron Kodesh? What is the line that you will often see in an Aron Kodesh? Dalif Nimiya Tomei. If you really have Hashem in your life, then Hashem is there always, right? V'lo yushnehem lo shikorim v'lo atzlanim v'lo atzbanim v'lo echad mehen v'lo tiyeh yeshena. Now we're talking about physical relationships. Not allowed to have relations when one partner is sleeping, right? Not allowed to be drunk, you know, not supposed to be nervous. You don't have a healthy relationship when one person is angry. Not healthy. V'lo yeh nosota v'hiyeh narotza. You're not allowed to coerce her, force her. Now, since we've talked about simcha, right, it's supposed to be a meaningful, it's supposed to be a joyous experience, and it has to be, you know, b'simcha, right, with joy, with purpose. Yisaper v'yisachek ma'atima k'dei shetit yashev nafsha v'yiv'al b'busha v'lo bazut. And there should be a certain amount of modesty, a certain amount of tzniut, right? The Gemara Nedarim quotes, actually the Gemara in Chagiga quotes Rav in terms of how he would make sure that he had a, how we know this is an interesting discussion, but it's almost like they interviewed his wife, there's a quote of his wife, but how he would create a healthy atmosphere before they would have relations. And the Gemara there asks, like, how is it that you have such magnificent children? Because when we had relationships from the beginning of the inception, even before conception, that there was this kedusha, there was this attempt to create a healthy atmosphere, a growing atmosphere, one of mutual respect and mutual understanding, right? It's interesting, by the way, if you look in Hilchot Deot, in Perek Bet, Halacha Dalet, right? So le'olam yarbe adam b'shtika v'lo yedaber ela obedavar chokhma b'dvarim tzuch lem l'chayi gufo. When we were talking about moderation, so we said, you know, a person shouldn't talk too much. Like, be a little quieter. Think about what you say. Amru al Rav, so the same Rav who took enormous pains to make sure that he had healthy dialogue with his wife, that it created a healthy atmosphere, right? And he was a Talmud of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, or Rabbeinu Nasi, who edited the Mishnah. Shelo sach sicha b'teila kol yamav. Right? That he never had an idle conversation. Even when he was talking about something, even if he talked about the Mets, he talked about it because there was purpose, because there was meaning to it. Right? So that's at least a level, you know, to aspire to. Okay? All right. Questions on this? Anybody? I'm getting this low. We need a teal energy today. You with me here? Yeah? Okay. So look at Halacha Hey.
I have a question about, like, the whole talking part.
Okay.
I mean, like, I don't know. It sort of makes sense of, like, you're having a family dinner, like, when the kids get up.
Right.
Like, to, like, stay there and, like, continue talking. It seems like an appropriate time to do so.
No, that's definitely true. First of all, you should know, if you file this away and someone here remembers that this is worthwhile, there is tremendous value to having meals together as a family regularly. They've actually done statistical studies and discovered that families that have family dinners, family breakfasts together on a regular basis, the kids have higher IQs, they do better in school, they're more focused, they have less emotional problems, emotional distress, relationships are healthy. There's a lot of reasons to do that. And we try very hard to do this every night at home, to have a family dinner, even if it's for like 20 minutes. You know, everybody comes, we sit around the table, and we talk about our day. You know, the phones are off, the BlackBerry's off, everything's off, right? So that's true. There is a certain type of conversation that happens then. It's a conversation of, you know, how was your day, and what happened, and this happened, and that happened. But you don't get to the intimate discussions because your kids are around. You know, that somebody might walk in the door. The phone might ring, right? On the other hand, if it's late at night, and you're both up late working, it's 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, and then you're having a quiet discussion, then you get to that zone where there's no interruption. Like, it's much easier not to pick up the phone at midnight, especially today with, you know, what's it called, caller ID. Because if it's an emergency, it's a different story, but it doesn't happen all the time. The kids aren't going to interrupt you. The phone isn't going to interrupt you. There's nowhere else that's pulling you. That's when you get into the deep conversations. That's when you get into the, like, you know, what's troubling you and what are you struggling with and how can I help, etc. Those are the things that really build relationships, right? So, again, this doesn't mean that, you know, I don't know, the Ramban in the Igaret HaKodesh says that if a couple has sort of gotten into that zone and they want to have relations, you're not supposed to wait hours. That's not healthy either, right? But when these things happen and when these intimate conversations happen in that type of zone, they end up becoming healthier conversations. There's a Gemara in Brachos that talks about the three Mishmarot of the night. It's on Daf Gimel, Dalet, I don't remember. And it talks about the last Mishmeret as being from the time, you know, that Isha Mesaperetim Ba'ala, that a woman naturally has these intimate moments. And one understanding is, because that's when the children are not awake yet, whatever. But so one opinion is that it's the beginning of the third Mishmeret. So it's also towards the middle of the night. It's that same idea. You know? Doesn't mean there's no, look, I have lots of conversations with all of my family members at all times of day and night. But you know, those zones, you know, sometimes, I don't know, my daughter got home from the army and happened to be, you know, we were all around the Shabbos table, and everybody went to sleep. I, you know, learning with my son, and he went to sleep. And then she was up, and we were sitting by the Shabbos table, and it must have been like 11:30 at night. That's when you have the most amazing conversations. That's when you talk about, like, what are your aspirations, and where could you see yourself going? Because that's the time that you give to your children, that it's just you and them, and there's no one else interrupting, and there's no one drawing on your time, and there's no struggle. There's something very healthy about that. Those times are to be treasured. So it doesn't mean that you sit down and plan your day and say, let's make sure I save 45 minutes for intimate conversation later on. It's just, it's healthy to be aware that those are smart things to set into your life. By the way, this is a debatable opinion here. You don't have to accept this, but I think this is true in general. Like, think about it. If you're, if you have a roommate, right? So, you know, most guys who come to yeshiva, they like to walk away with one, two, three, you know, having made some solid friends that last a lifetime. You know, certainly when you're in college, right? So when do you develop those relationships? You don't develop those relationships just because you play ball together. You develop relationships when you get into those deep discussions. Right? If you went through a whole year and there's a guy here in the yeshiva and you don't even know how many siblings he has. You know, you don't know that he's in conflict with his brother. You don't know that, you know, he so wants to be in this university and his parents want him to go to that university. All of the things that are on, right? So those things don't come up in basketball courts. They don't come up sitting around the lunch table when everybody's around. They come up because, like, you know, you're it's quiet and nobody's back in the dorm yet, or you're sitting up talking, whatever it is, and you get into those discussions, and there's nowhere to go. I mean, I always struggle with that. Like, there's a bunch of times this year where I'll, you know, somebody, like, overslept or whatever, but then I'll hear or they'll tell me, like, they were up talking to somebody else till 3 in the morning. So it doesn't matter, like, that we have a responsibility to try to say you should be here in the morning. I don't think that's unhealthy. Like, if it happens every night, it's not so good. But those times are valuable. That's what I think this is saying. And how you conduct yourselves in those times. Like, you're sitting up at 2 in the morning and you're talking to your child or, let's say, your spouse or your girlfriend. And you feel like, you know, this is a relationship where you can really be yourself. Like, if you can't really, be yourself with a girlfriend in the same way you can when you're married. Because b'chalzot, her opinion is important and you don't want to lose her and whatever, right? When you're married, like, that's a different zone. Even then, like, how you conduct yourself. You know, the best example I can think of is, imagine that you're staying in a hotel, okay, right? And you have to go to the bathroom. You're staying in a motel room, I don't know. It's just you alone in the motel room. So you close the door of the bathroom. So you close the bathroom door. So, you know, some people don't think about that at all. It's habit. And some people, you know, I haven't done a study on this, but I imagine, whatever, you're the only one in the room. What's the difference? But now imagine you're married, and you're married 20 years, 30 years, and you have to go to the bathroom. Do you close the door? Of course you close the door. Why? She's your wife. I mean, you know, you've seen each other in those circumstances, and, you know, because there's a certain level of modesty, there's a certain level of tzniut, that you keep even in the most intimate of circumstances. And those levels of modesty, they help to build the relationship as much as the character of the nature of the conversations. Make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, right? So now he takes this to another level. Let me ask an interesting question. Without looking at the halacha, so a person goes to the bathroom. So what do you think, right, would be, based on this, healthy bathroom behavior? Like, you think about where the halacha goes to, that the halacha is willing to talk about how a person behaves in the bathroom. So some people look at this and say, okay, this is crazy. Like, they want to control me. Like, it's just too much already. On the other hand, there's a beauty to the idea that in b'chol drachecha da'eihu, in everything you do, you can be growing. So you tell me, what do you think is healthy and what do you think is unhealthy bathroom behavior? What do you think? How many of you have ever thought about this, really? It's not really way up there in your mind, right?
Yeah, okay. Generally, I go to the bathroom, I just do what feels right. Yeah.
Okay, so you can imagine halacha says just because it feels right doesn't mean it is right.
Other people being in the bathroom and stuff?
Okay, yeah, let's say.
I mean, I don't think it makes sense to, like, talk to people while...
Okay. So this is halacha that you don't talk. This fits with what we were saying before. Why is it that you don't have relations right after you eat? Because the more physical an activity, the more difficult it is to create a spiritual energy. So there are very few things that are as physical, okay, as going to the bathroom. So when you go to the bathroom, you're really giving to and involved in a moment that's purely behemi. It's purely physical. It's animal-like. In those moments, you don't try to create dialogue because the dialogue won't be healthy. And if you ever went into a public bathroom and, you know, guys walk in and they start talking, right? They're not talking about the philosophical difference between Nietzsche and what Stephen Hawking's thinking about it. It's gutter talk usually in the bathroom. And if it's not gutter talk, it's not healthy talk. So la halacha, you don't talk in the bathroom. Okay, I remember once, maybe it's an extreme example, but I remember once I was going to the men's room in Gush. And Gush is like a big bathroom, you know, there's like a lot of guys there. So they have like, I don't know, 20 stalls and whatever it is. And it happened to be that Rav Lichtenstein walked into the bathroom, right? So you can see guys, pardon? You can see guys. They were like, you know, there's always like a few yeshiva guys. Everybody all of a sudden, the energy changed. No, the energy changed because like the Rosh Hashiva is in the bathroom with you. You don't want to be in the bathroom with the Rosh Hashiva, right? And I noticed this right away. Like I was washing my hands. And I thought, you know what, this is like how often do you get this opportunity to see how your Rosh Hashiva conducts himself in the bathroom? So I wasn't going to follow him into the stall. But I figured I would pretend to wash my hands for a minute. I just wanted to see. And there was a different energy about him. He was focused on not, there was no discussion. He didn't look at anybody. Because even when you look at someone and acknowledge someone, you're creating a certain dialogue. He didn't do that. And he does that. And I was already close with him. Like I would, you know, he would make eye contact with me if he walked by and smile, and I would make eye contact with him. He didn't look at me. And he knew I was there. He saw me, right? And he washed his hands. He didn't say a word. And he was sort of focused on washing his hands, but he didn't make the bracha there. Then he walked out, and then he became himself again. It was a learning experience. And, you know, when you go into the bathroom, like, I don't know if you've noticed this or if any of the Rebbeim here have ever walked in the bathroom or you're in the book, but they don't talk. You don't talk in the bathroom.
Separate rivers bathroom,
right? Now, sometimes somebody's in that bathroom, I walk in the other bathroom. You don't talk in the bathroom. You don't have that banter, you know? There's a level of tzniut, you know. We talked the other day about the fact that that like you don't eat, you know, you don't walk around the shuk having a hot dog hanging out of your mouth. So I'm not as makbid on that, but I'm very makbid in the bathroom, you know. For example, you know, when you go into a bathroom, so there's like the urinals, and then there's the stalls, right? So if you get into a place where you're somehow more representing Torah, doesn't mean you think you're some Torah scholar, but if other people view you that way, then you have certain responsibilities. So I won't use the urinal, because if a student came in when I was using the urinal, standing next to me, it'd be uncomfortable for him. And it's not sanua.
It's a major high school problem.
Pardon?
It's a major problem in high schools.
A major problem in high schools.
Yeah, because
why? Because teachers will walk in and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So a teacher who's healthy in this regard, and I'm not custom judging, wouldn't use the urinal in a... He would wait. He wouldn't use the urinal in a men's room.
Have separate bathrooms for teachers.
Right, okay. But even in the separate bathroom. Sometimes you'll have a teacher's bathroom. I've been in a lot of high schools now, seen a lot of teacher's bathrooms. And I was once in the bathroom, and there's like a toilet stall, whatever it is. And a Rebbe walked in and just started using the urinal. I was very embarrassed. I didn't come out. I didn't know what to do with myself. You'd never see that here. Like, you know, Rebbein wouldn't do that here. So there's a certain tzniut in terms of how you carry. You wouldn't walk into a bathroom and say, yo, what's up, right? Like, you know, there's a certain tzniut in the bathroom. So again, is there a halach isur? Are you going to be chayav a karban? Are they going to lash you for it? No. But there's a certain, when you get used to carrying yourself with modesty in private, it affects the way you behave in public as well. You know what I mean?
I think our bathroom here creates some issues. Very close quarters.
That's true. That's a problem. We actually debated when we put a lot of thought into how we built this bathroom. It was a very tight space. There used to be one bathroom in there. And we realized we needed more bathrooms, right? So it's a problem. It's the best we could do with the space, but you're right. In fact, the original fellow who was designing them said, have two stalls and you'll have more urinals. And we didn't want to do that. Then we debated maybe have no urinals. We figured out that we wouldn't have any more bathrooms with no urinals. If you think about how that thing is created, you have the same number of stalls and no urinals. And why do we create urinals? Because with chazot, sometimes a fellow has to relieve himself and he's in the middle of learning. He doesn't want to go in. It's much less time. It's quicker. It allows, you know, sort of more guys who need to go to the bathroom to use it. But it's a legitimate question. There are piskei halacha, by the way, about this.
Yeah,
how you can...
I had some of my best conversations in a bathroom.
Those same best conversations would be better, holier, deeper, on some level. We may not notice the difference,
like,
if they were out of the bathroom.
If I had to go to the bathroom in high school and I realized that one of my friends was in the stall next to me, you know? And, like, we're not going to talk in class, and we're not going to necessarily, like, take away from, like, how we could be, like, studying or like, doing homework or whatever during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it's, like, that time, that, like, 2 or 3 minutes, where we're just, like, talking to each other about each other's life or day, whatever.
Okay. You definitely, I mean, halacha is clear about that. You definitely elevate the nature of your conversation when you're not in the middle of going to the bathroom.
Okay, no, I'm not disagreeing with that.
Yeah, that's okay. You know.
Yeah,
I don't listen. I don't. It's not impossible that you can have a good conversation in the bathroom. That's not the reason you don't have a conversation in the bathroom. The reason you don't have a conversation in the bathroom is because it pays tribute to what a gift speech is, and how speech separates you from being, you know, just a physical animal. And part of even speaking is a certain level of gratitude to Hashem, and that doesn't occur when you're in such a physical experience and all that. Even the bracha of Asher Yatzar, which is all about thanking Hashem for being able to go to the bathroom. You don't make that bracha in the bathroom. You make that bracha after you go out. Look, everything, the theme that goes through all this stuff is sensitivity. Like, if I could think of the biggest goal of a year in yeshiva, right, it's to get you to think about things that you never thought about before. Like, after this discussion, and if you notice things, you know, by the time you leave here, you'll be a different person when you walk into a bathroom. You know, you'll just be sensitive to things most people aren't sensitive to. You'll think about it. Whether you change your behavior is an interesting question, but you'll definitely think more about it. And that's a good thing, you know, right? And that's what the Rambam says. Kol ha-noheg minag zeh, and all who keep this, right, who follow this sort of, you know, conduct, lo dai lo shekidesh nafsho v'tiyer atzmo v'tiken deotav, not only does he sort of, you know, l'kadesh nefesh is to bring Hashem inside of you, to make your reality, to see yourself sort of connected to Hashem. Fit tiheretzmo, you become a purer person, right? V'tikein de'otav, it helps you to fix your character. Ela she'im ayu lo banim, yu na'im uvayshanim. If you have children, they'll be, that's a different, pleasant, healthy, good-looking. They'll also be sort of a little embarrassed, they'll be a little tzanua. Re'uyin l'chokhma v'chassidus, and they're worthy of balance, of chokhma, of wisdom, of chassidus, right? Okay? But if you carry yourself in the way that, you know, what they call Ami Aretz, you know, the people who don't have this sensitivity do, then that's how your children will be. Now, what does this mean? Okay, can you do a statistical study and see this to be true? I have no idea. But
Hadia says that every child comes from a thought in your
right. Rav Nachman has long discussions about this. Absolutely. Yeah. But
so the thought comes from your brain, and then they say it comes out of the man.
Right. Well, where does that thought come from?
That it comes from, like, if it's like coming from a place of, like, distortion or like cloudiness, then it's not your child could have a great soul, you know, but at the same time, like, living in a really tough body.
That's absolutely true. Look, I want you to know, beginnings are a very powerful thing. And we underestimate their power. You know? Every time you're in a moment of beginning, that moment and its success, it creates a process. It's much more difficult to undo an unhealthy beginning than it is to build an unhealthy beginning, right? And that's true with everything. It's true when you start your year. Like, imagine a guy comes to yeshiva, and the first week he decides, look, I don't know if I can manage this whole year, but the first week, I'm going to wake up every day, I'm going to work out before I wake up, I'm going to daven, I'm going to do this, that, whatever, just for a week. And he sets his week that way, you set your tone. Much harder to change energy. Think about it. Let's say somebody here says to himself, wow, you know, I'm just like, I haven't been getting up on time, or I haven't been doing this, or I wanted to learn more, or I wanted to be healthier, or I wanted to work out more, whatever it is. And now there's like, you know, week and a half left till Purim. Then you have like a week left till Zman, so it's like the end of Zman. So what's the natural thing to do? You say, okay, look, next Zman I'm going to whatever. It's harder to change in the middle of a turn. But when you're starting, right? That's why, by the way, the beginning of Kaitzman is the most amazing Zman of the year, bar none. I mean, really bar none. What you accomplish in those 8-9 weeks, you're building on a year's worth of work. It's unbelievable. You can see it at the end of the week. And the guys who sort of, and more people in yeshiva get that at the beginning of Kaitzman, so they hit the ground running, and you see the guys who manage for 3 days to set a pattern, that's it. They have an unbelievable Kaitzman. It's an amazing thing. So that's true with everything. You wake up in the morning, and you decide you're just going to have a productive first 10 minutes of your day. You create the energy for a productive day. So that's true with the creation of life. Those moments in which the beginning of the creation of a life occurs, in which two people, you know, are partnering with Hashem, right? Like, you know, there's a famous vort, I don't even know where this comes from, that the word ish, right, and the word isha have two letters in common, and they have one distinct letter each. They both have the letters aleph and shin, and the one, ish, has a yud, and the other, isha, has a hey. So if they have the yud and the hey come together, which is God's name, then they'll have a healthy relationship. Because the relationship would be invested with Hashem. But if you take Hashem out of the equation, if you take purpose, if you take meaning, if you take the desire for growth out of the equation, all that's left is fire. It's destructive, right? So if in those moments you can create a healthy space, then that has to affect on a mystical level sort of where that goes. So it doesn't mean you can't fix it. Like imagine that a person has, two people are drunk and they have relations and the woman gets pregnant. But then they feel terrible about it, and so they spend the next 9 months learning Torah all day and all night and doing chesed. I have to imagine that you know, like, what do we know, right? But that's what the Rambam is saying here, right? And then, all right, so we'll get to Halacha Vav tomorrow. We'll stop here, okay, because it's a longer halacha. Food for thought, Rabbosai. Food for thought. Have a good day. Today's big day. Today's the last day before the Negev Teal. Got to get a good day of learning. My personal opinion...